It's 6 Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific.
To give up our own oil and gas and buy the energy that we need from countries that hate us. So those countries that hate us will have more money to buy weapons to try to kill us.
Coast to coast and around the world from the America Out Loud Talk Radio studios.
Now, I realize you can't fix stupid, but you can vote it out.
It's time for Truth Be Told with Booker Scott.
Well, it looks like you made it through the eclipse. Glad you are here. Wasn't that something? And I don't know what you were expecting going into it, but I'm glad we're all here together on The Truth Be Told. My name is Booker Scott. This hour is brought to you by Gold Co. Just go to BookerLikesGold.com to find out if diversifying some of your savings is the right move for you. And you can do that at BookerLikesGold.com. Well, Congress is getting back in session this week, so there will be much to talk about. And of course, with it being Monday, it is time for Mondays with Matt, and Matt is Matt Palumbo. He is the content director for the Bongino Report. He's also an author. He's written the book Spygate with Dan Bongino. He also wrote the book The Man Behind the Curtain, George Soros. We're going to welcome him here now for Mondays with Matt. Matt, how was your weekend? I hope you had a good one, and thanks a lot for coming back.
Good as always. Always an honor to be on. Thanks for having me.
And I guess we both survived the eclipse. What were you? What did you expect going into Monday?
To maybe go blind. No, I don't know. It'll be a fun thing to talk about afterwards, but I don't have too many eclipse-related talking points, I suppose.
I know, but to me, it's amazing because it really doesn't mean much to me. My wife and I were having
a
conversation about it coming home from church, and she was talking about it. And I'm like, well, it's just going to get dark. And she said, yeah, but it's not supposed to be. I said, well, you could wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and it's going to be dark. So I don't know. I guess it's neat. It's a phenomenon that most people will never see again in their life. Although I do remember one. It's been a long time, probably close to 30 years ago, but I'm glad you're here. You made it through the eclipse. I thought about possibly getting a black jogging suit and some black Nikes, laying down in the bed and just hoping that the eclipse would take me away like the comet did those other folks 30 years ago in California, but I didn't go that far. Let's have a conversation about Mayorkas. Here come the impeachment articles. They're going to come down the hallway in all the pageantry that's going to take place on Wednesday. And I guess, what can we expect out of this? Not much of anything.
Yeah, I mean, he could get impeached. Well, he was impeached in the House, but nothing's going to happen in the Senate. I mean, the threshold is such that it makes it impossible. But the thing is, Democrats did that to Trump knowing very well what was going to happen. That was he was going to get acquitted. So if they do go through with impeachment, the whole purpose is just going to be to make the border crisis an issue and hopefully elevate it to that, the national consciousness more than it has been, and go through all the numbers and play back him denying there's a problem while secretly he was once secretly recorded admitting there's a problem. Go through him denying that there's violence coming across the border, then juxtapose it with the actual violence that we know is happening. So it could be basically an advertisement against illegal immigration. We could turn it into that, but it's not going to actually do anything to him personally. And I think everyone knows that. I'm not really being a downer here.
No, I think you're right. And from what I understand, there is a real good possibility that none of the information is going to come out anyway. They could, as I understand it, they will swear in the Senate on Thursday to become the jury for the impeachment hearing. And at that point, they can actually make a motion to dismiss. And I think that could be coming down the pike.
Well, they're definitely going to try to. Sorry to be ignorant on this. What's the votes needed to dismiss? Is it just a simple majority?
Yeah, I think it is. And I'm not 100% sure on that, but I believe that it is.
All right. Yeah, well, there's always one Republican who, one or two, that they're going to go the other way. So that is completely possible. And the thing is, too, they might try to justify it by saying something like, oh, it's going to, we shouldn't be focusing on this when we should be focusing on the election or something. They're going to make it seem like it's for some completely other reason than it really is. But It would not surprise me if that happened.
Yeah, they'll probably, people like Romney and Susan Collins and Murkowski, they're going to say it's not worth our time and energy. It's a waste. It's a waste of money. He's not going to be impeached, so why go through it? And to your earlier point, why go through it? Because of what's happening at the border and what has been for 3 years, and that information needs to be out in front of people. Unfortunately, through this process, it's not going to happen. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a lose-lose. It's either it doesn't happen at all, or it does happen, and then nothing happens.
Right.
But, you know, again, you know, hopefully some info gets out there. Although, I guess, to argue against myself, I do kind of think that if you haven't gotten the memo on the border, I don't know how you are going to. Like,
right.
Like, who isn't aware of what's going on already? So, you know, we'll get some good sound bites, but it, unfortunately, I think, could be, I don't know, preaching to the choir, but... That all being said, you know, the Democrats play offense. We generally don't, so we should go for it regardless.
Yeah, if we were on defense being described in a football game, they would say the Republicans have their skates on all the time because they're always going backwards and trying to play defense and never offense. Unfortunately, over the weekend, Donald Trump had a big fundraiser. I guess it was 2 weekends ago that it was Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and Joe Biden. They did a fundraiser, and everybody was bragging about the $25 or $26 million that they were able to bring in. And then over the weekend, Donald Trump raises $50 million, and he needed it, didn't he?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's hilarious too, because the media narrative was all that how historic and unprecedented Biden's fundraiser was, and then. Fast forward not that long, and Trump almost doubles it in one night. So, no, it's great to see the latest media fail there. And, yeah, Trump does need it. I mean, it is unfortunate that so much of his fundraising is being siphoned off into a lot of these legal cases. But that is why they have the legal cases in the first place. It is lawfare. And each individual case against Trump, Paul Morrow pointed this out to me, they're all unique and they're all unprecedented. You know, they're not based on anything in the past of, Trump did this, we know it's wrong because of X. They're all theoretical cases, and each and every one of them is brought by someone who is a person of the left or has themselves specifically campaigned on trying to take down Donald Trump. I mean, Letitia James, you can find compilations for campaigning on, we're going to take down Trump, we're going to bankrupt him, we're going to stop him. And, you know, the one question... I think someone actually pondered, I think Jake Tapper actually pondered this on CNN. He said, you know, does anyone really think this would be happening if Trump wasn't running for president again? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking if even someone at CNN could see that for what it is, who can? So, yeah, it's for, so I think the fundraising is a very good sign. And another thing, too, is, you know, I pointed out when people were talking about Biden getting all the big donors at that fundraiser that Trump, his donors are, he does have less money raised overall. But by the number of donors, he's doing better than Biden. And that's because he has much smaller average contributions. And that's a much bigger sign of voter enthusiasm than the total amount of dollars raised to a large extent. And like, you know, if 1 million people donate $1 to Trump versus 1 billionaire giving $1 billion to Biden, the 1 million is, you know, you could, or let's just say, one billionaire having 2 million to Biden. Well, one guy has got 1 million people backing him. The other guy has one.
Right.
So, you know, in terms of voter enthusiasm, it's really the total number of donors that matters. So Trump's beating Biden there. And then Biden briefly was leading, the big money donors for about a day, it seemed. And then Trump went and doubled them. So it's very bullish for Trump.
Yeah, it was. And I think another thing that it does, it indicates that the big money that had left Donald Trump is coming back, because you don't raise $50 million over a weekend without the big money guys coming in and partying with you in Palm Beach. And I think that's a good sign. But I also wonder, is it also possibly an indication that those never Trumpers, that 18 to 20% that were with Nikki Haley, they're starting to come out of the ether of the primary? And could they start gravitating to at least holding their nose and voting for Donald Trump?
Well, that was my thought, too, because there was, you know, the question of what happens with Nikki Haley's supporters. I mean, we know that from the primaries, I think 43% were Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But then of the remaining 57, it's, well, you know, what percent are going to reluctantly vote for Trump? And I would say it's probably going to be most of them. I mean, if that's where the money is going, if that's what the people who are willing to put their money where their mouths are doing, I do think it's a positive sign for Trump. But I do have to ask the obvious question. which is how do they not see this coming in the first place? I mean, there was never a second that there was any doubt that Trump was going to be the nominee. So I, you know, question their judgment, I guess, for the past year, but I'm glad they're finally making the right choice. I hope Trump sees it for what it is, though, and doesn't in any way cater to them or, you know, let the money influence him in their favor at all. But I don't think it really will.
No, and I think that was probably some of the problem that we saw in his first term was maybe not understanding who to trust and, and whether they were, you know, in it for the right reasons or not. And a lot of times it turns out that they probably were not during his first term. And that kind of gave him a black eye among a lot of people on the right that are not happy with some of the things that Donald Trump, at least when it comes to personnel decisions, that they're not happy with. And while we're speaking of Donald Trump, a conversation you and I have never had is about a vice presidential pick for Donald Trump. I would assume, I guess it has to come by July. So anytime between now and then, he could make the announcement. Who do you like? Who do you have on your radar?
You know, I haven't really been thinking of specific candidates. I've been thinking more in terms of what demographic does he want to appeal to, because the thing about the VP is I don't even know if the VP knows what the VP does. I don't think Kamala Harris really knows what her job is. None of us do.
Well, she did. I don't know. Did you see the video over the weekend of her not of her saying there were no women's brackets until 2020?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, even when she was border czar, there was no one really knew what she did. So, so the point is, you know, my point is, look, what is the purpose of the vice president really? And my opinion is that it's largely a pandering opportunity in the presidential election. So it's which demographic do we think is the most likely to, you know, are we the most likely to siphon off from the left? And that would be, you know, the three main ones would be women, Hispanics, and African-Americans.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, which groups votes can flip the most in elections, it seems largely Hispanics, or women, women after that in that order. You know, I know there's a lot of hope that maybe Trump could get as much as 20% of the black vote, but it unfortunately in presidential elections that number stays like 10% or lower. And the example I always give is Harry Truman, who was in his youth paid the membership fee to join the KKK, and yet he got something like 3/4 of the black vote when he ran for president. So like those are the numbers we're running against. So you know, it's obviously I wish we could try to get every possible demographic, but we have finite time and resources and money, and it is, there's a zero-sum element where if you try too much with one group that you can't really pull that many from, you lose more votes from other groups that you could have spent time trying to appeal to. So, you know, which woman in particular, I'm not sure. I mean, God, let's hope not Nikki Haley. It seems unlikely, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but, you know, I've heard Tulsi Gabbard floated, but I don't know if that will upset his base more than help, because obviously she was a Democrat. You know, obviously her entire career. But then the same thing too with the left is like, I don't know which faction of the left could potentially then vote for Trump if he picked her. But I've seen her name floated. I've seen Kristi Noem.
Yeah.
But I haven't really, you know, thought too much about any particular candidate.
Well, I had both of those written down to have this conversation with you, Kristi Noem and Tulsi Gabbard both. And I wonder if someone like Kristi Noem demographically helps anywhere, because she's seen as MAGA. So I don't know if that helps in swing states, which, by the way, it appears that Donald Trump is leading now in polls in 6 of the 7 of those swing states. So that's good news, and it seems like that lead is also growing. It's not going the other way. What about Tim Scott? He's someone I like. I think the guy has a great story. His grandfather was a cotton picker, and if you listen to him, he's very charismatic. He's a great speaker. And one thing I look for in a vice president, especially with Joe Biden 81, Donald Trump will be, what, 78, is, you know, that's old. So can the vice president actually be the president and do a good job? And when I look at Tim Scott, I think he could with his experience.
Yeah, I like, no, as a person and a candidate, I like him. But, you know, when it comes to my pandering thesis, I think that, you know, I don't think we'd bring over more than, let's say, 5 percentage points of the African-American vote. But for the other reasons, I definitely agree. I mean, I think the funniest thing he could have done was on April Fool's Day announced that Mike Pence was going to be
gosh.
But that was opportunity lost there.
There would have been death. People would have died of heart attacks if he had done that. They would have. I'm not even joking. Yeah. There would have been serious problems health-wise for a lot of people in the MAGA community. They wouldn't have known what to do. What about Ramaswamy? You know, when you look at demographics, he could pull that younger, because that's who he appealed to when he was in the primaries.
He was very smart, very well-spoken. The only thing I didn't really like about him was the answers sometimes seem so perfect. They had to have been scripted out ahead of time. But, you know, listen, obviously I don't want to complain that he's too polished. I don't know. Do we remember when he pulled that in the GOP primary? Because, like, I don't know how he specifically is viewed by the left.
I don't remember that.
Okay. But no, he's a very smart guy. You know, it's funny you say that, because I noticed he never attacked Trump directly during the primary, and Trump really never went after him.
Yeah.
So I have that in the back of my head of, could this be a potential VP kind of situation?
I don't know. It may be. I don't know. I think I see him more in the cabinet than I would as a vice president. I think he's definitely someone that Donald Trump will have around if Donald Trump wins, because I think there is that loyalty thing, to your point that you just bring up, that neither one of them really attacked each other. So I think Donald Trump will feel like Ramaswamy would be loyal to him. Another name I'm going to throw out that some people mention to me every once in a while is Sarah Huckabee. Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas. And I typically push back on that a little bit, because I think she needs a little bit more experience, but she's doing a great job in that state.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, I said earlier, you're like a woman candidate, I think would probably be able to bring over the most amount of votes. Yeah, she's definitely one candidate for that. Although I guess it's sort of in the same category of Kristi Noem, where you could say, like, you know, she's already associated with Trump, so she's not really going to bring over any moderates, or would bring over less than another candidate. Obviously, like, you know, it's an awkward situation where I want the candidate to be as pro-Trump as possible, but for the sake of bringing over votes for Trump, you want them to at least have the appearance of being more moderate, even though I don't actually want them to be. It's more of an optics thing, I guess, from my perspective.
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder if that's even necessary. What if they're just a good person with a good message and could be a good executive in the office, regardless of what they're able to do by, you know, the color of their skin or their gender? What if they're just a dynamite candidate? And, well, you know, does that work anymore?
You know, I wish that's how it works. I just feel like, you know, if you and I were to run for office, we can already just, like, we could place bets on how the media would portray us, and we would know how we really are, but, like, we would be, you know, we would both inevitably be portrayed as Hitler or some other dictator.
Of course,
at some point.
Yeah.
Like, it's practically a rule at this point that you're going to get compared to Hitler. So it's, you know, whatever image you have is going to go through the lens of the media, and, you know, it's going to be something completely different by the time it's, you know, on the other end.
I think in this campaign, and I think we talked about it last week, and I talk about it quite frequently, the only thing the Democrats have to run on is fear. They are going to try to create the fear in their base to get them to go vote, and it's fear of losing democracy, it's fear of the orange man, or the Nazis, whatever it is. They have to keep the orange man out of the White House. And so that's the fear that they're going to use. The actress Jennifer Lawrence, who I really don't even know who she is, she was on a radio program. I'm going to play this clip for you, and I'm going to get your opinion on it. Here she is, and let's see if she's unhinged.
As soon as he takes the oath, he will have generals walk down the steps of the Capitol. He will take a hammer and break the glass where the Constitution is, and he will tear it up in our faces and say, now, I'm the king of the fucking world. You will bow down, bitches. He will punish everybody that didn't vote for him. Let me tell y'all how I know this shit. I know it because I know what mental illness looks like.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think? Do you think she knows what mental illness looks like?
Yeah, she experiences it daily. it's so weird, too, when these people talk about, like, pretending to care about the Constitution, like, as if they love the Second Amendment all of a sudden. It's just truly bizarre to see. And whenever they're fear-mongering about, like, oh, Trump's going to do this and that when he takes office, I'm always thinking, why didn't he just do it the first time he was president?
Right.
Like, you think if you're going to make him a dictator and never lose office, he would have just done that after the second election. Like the opportunity was there if he wanted to, and
sure.
He clearly did not. He challenged it legally, which you're allowed to do, and then he left office. So what's the dictatorial action he took there?
Well, he didn't, but again, that's the play that the Democrats are going to use. You hear it over and over and over. Every time Hakeem Jeffries talks, it's the MAGA extremist, and I think they're throwing in the Christian nationalists into the same box. And they're just going to throw everybody into it to create that fear, to get donations, and then also to get people to go vote. And I think that's all they have. Everything else has been a disaster for them the last 3 years.
They made Bidenomics the focus of the campaign, and then that only lasted a few months because they realized it was just hurting them in the polls. And then a news story came out, too, that they were trying to do all these supposedly nonpartisan voter registration drives. And you know, when I hear that, I just assume, okay, you're going to go on college campuses to get Democrats, or you're going to go in areas that are biased to the left. And it turns out they actually started secretly ending those drives because they realized on net balance they were getting more voters for Trump than Biden. So their own voter registration efforts were helping Trump. So that's how bad it is.
It's bad. The things that are going on in the country right now are bad, and this election is really important. And Matt, as always, thank you for coming and being with us on Mondays.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
More Truth in Minutes on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, it is Unleashed the Political News Hour. That's followed by the National Security Hour at 8 o'clock. And then at 9, it's After Dark with Robin Andrew. I'm Booker Scott, and this is The Truth Be Told. I told you going into the break there that we have a special guest and a good conversation here that we want to get into. And this gentleman is Dr. Seldon Roth. And Dr. Roth, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Booker.
And we want to get into this conversation about the mind of Donald Trump. You wrote the book, Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald J. Trump. And you know, the media and political foes, they attack Donald Trump. They say he's not fit for office. But yet you wrote the book from a psychoanalyst position. And you have, what, how many years experience in this?
Well, actually, it seems inconceivable, because one often thinks of oneself in one's youth, but I must be at this for over 50 years or so now. I'm 85. It feels like yesterday, which I suppose one could hear from many people. I want to comment on one thing that just happened between us, Booker.
Sure.
I don't know how many of your listeners know, that you often precede your broadcast with a prayer, a very fervent prayer.
I've never shared that before, but I don't mind. Yeah.
I think that is so essential, because as you know, that's one thing that Donald Trump wishes to bring back in full force in America, which is faith, religious faith. And if I may, Trump actually has what I would call Christian charisma. I've seen videos of him, I'd have to call them sermons because they were in a church, in which he is so in touch with his congregation in front of him that he inspires that old concept of, you know, a witness by faith. You really have to believe that the man is a devout Christian. And you know, many people talk about him as a devil incarnate.
Sure, yeah.
He's actually a rather devout Christian, and it's very much part of who he is as a person and part of his mental capacity. There are only two people in his entire life that he refers to as mentor, and one is his father, Fred Trump Sr., and the other one is Norman Vincent Peale, who many young people these days don't know the name. But Norman Vincent Peale wrote a book that was very influential in America. You can still catch it, even in paperback, at airports, called The Power of Positive Thinking. He was a minister at the Marblehead Congregational Church in Manhattan, one of the oldest in the country. Actually, it started when New York was New Amsterdam under the Dutch. But that family, the Trump family, Trump Sr., attended Peale's services every Sunday on Fifth Avenue. They lived in Queens. They'd come across the river. And Trump always says that Peale was the most riveting speaker he had ever experienced. He always felt, he's written, that he would leave that congregation every Sunday wishing he had three more hours just to listen to Peale. And Peale was very much a speaker like Trump. No notes, spoke just from the heart and the head, and very spontaneous. And Trump has adopted that style. He kept a very close relationship with Peale, and actually Peale married Trump and his first wife. Actually, Peale married Trump's two older sisters. And if I remember correctly, I think he even married Richard Nixon's daughter. It was very much a Republican congregation. But when you started this interchange between us with a prayer, I thought, wow, this is somehow on the right wavelength, because that is Donald Trump. And as you know, the media will often play him up as an irreligious, unethical, corrupt individual.
Well, Dr. Roth, you remember when the church was burning in Washington, D.C., and then the next day he went across the street to that church with a Bible in his hand and he held it up. It happened to be upside down, and the detractors came after him at that point.
Well, they can, but all they have to do is look to the history. And he has a very deep, long history. This is way before politics. He started attending that church, you know, as a child, and then through his adult life up until the death of Peale. Peale lived to about 90 or so. And then he continued going to that same church, which by the time he built Trump Tower became a walk down the block. And in those days, he could walk in down the block.
You know, I think it's funny, Dr. Roth, sometimes that people think that Christians should be perfect in life. And as a Christian, we know that we're Christians because we are imperfect. And I think it's odd that so many people, detractors of Donald Trump, would go after him and his Christianity and his faith.
Definitely. I mean, it's the one thing I do in my book. I've written a book. I try and be free of jargon, and I present him as a human being, because people will understand the psychological soundness of his nature if they can understand it in terms of everyday facts of living, which have to do with love and work. Those are the two big foci of his life. And of course, all pastors would be out of business if all Christians were perfect.
That's true.
That profession in those churches would have been gone long ago.
Yeah. That's true. Let's talk about this book a little bit. You have never had Donald Trump on your couch, have you?
No. If I had Donald Trump on my couch, I wouldn't have been able to write the book. I mean, there's an issue of confidentiality.
Sure.
Actually, not having him as a patient is what freed me up. Now, the interesting thing here, Booker, is I spent my life ensconced, in my clinical practice in Boston. I taught at Harvard for over 40 years. I wrote. I knew nothing about politics, nothing at all. And I retired. We moved out here. I'm in Los Angeles because our three sons are out here and all our grandchildren are here. And this is where the love is, for my wife and I. So we moved out here, and then I got a call from a rather eminent person who passed away last year, may he rest in peace, who was a forensic psychiatrist, who specialized in legal issues and was actually with the psychiatrist in charge for the CIA for 20 years. He had developed the personality profiles of Saddam Hussein, Kim Jong-un's father, and actually a lot of our foreign policy in relation to Saddam Hussein was based on Gerald Post's a description of Saddam Hussein. So he called me up, said he had heard about me from people in Washington. I had spent several years early in my career at the National Institute of Health. And I will say, as a proviso there, I never met Fauci.
Yeah, I was going to ask. As soon as you mentioned NIH, that's the next question, isn't it?
But believe you me, Booker, I met plenty like him.
That's not very comforting if there's more like him.
But most people at NIH are truly wonderful, dedicated people. It's a wonderful place. But I understand who and what Fauci was, having spent my time there. So he had heard from people in the Washington area that I was conservative. And he had an interesting proposition. He wanted to write a book with me. He's an ardent Democrat, a hater of Trump. And he thought that it would be very good for the nation if someone vehemently against Trump and pro-Biden and someone pro-Trump would write a book together and have a conversation.
That would be interesting.
I thought it was fascinating. Although, to tell you the truth, I told him I know nothing about Trump, except I had been in I grew up in New York. First 27 years of my life and my wife's life were in New York. So I knew the name Trump, and I had been in Trump Tower, but I knew nothing about his doings or his politics. And at first I said, it's a great idea, but I'm really not the kind of person you need for this. You need somebody who knows about Trump. But actually my family said to me, given your background, the urgency of this issue, the division that's growing in the nation, they all felt it would be very important for me. They understood if I said no. So I called him back and I said I would do it, but he'd have to give me 5-6 months to read. So in that time, I read all. Trump has co-authored about 15 different books.
Yeah, he's a salesman. Yeah.
Endless articles on him, interviews. There's no end of data that one can collect. And I immersed myself completely. And actually, I felt kind of close to the guy, and because he He grew up in Queens. I grew up in Brooklyn, not far from Queens. We often ventured in there. And all the buildings and things he talked about in Manhattan, I knew all those places. And the style of life, a kind of boisterous, noisy New Yorker, was quite familiar to me. So I came to like him. And what I found was an enormous consistency. No matter where you look in that man's life, his principles and his beliefs are the same. How he goes about executing them may be different, but his consistency, whatever that man did in his first term of office, you can expect he will do in his second term of office. It's a given. And that's part of his stability and the soundness of his mind, that there's a reliability and integrity to the whole personality structure. And although he's also a multifaceted individual, because he's got a lot of native artistic tendencies, which come out when he's in front of 10 or 15,000 people.
What does that mean, Dr. Roth? What does that mean? Break that down for someone like me.
Okay. You know what it means? It means when you watch him in a one-to-one interview with Hannity, or as he was the other evening with Laura Ingraham, you see this sober, quiet, listening individual responding to the individual questions. But you put him in front of 10 or 15,000 people, and the man is electrified. He looks at everyone in that crowd. It's the same way he is in a church, if you've ever seen him do any kind of sermon in a church. He is in touch with every person in that crowd, and his whole body vibrates in response to them. And he reminds me very much of someone I saw as a young boy. I had the great privilege of seeing Al Jolson. In the old days when I was a child in the 1940s, the local theaters showed vaudeville. And Jolson would make the rounds. And so in my poor little neighborhood in Brooklyn, there was Al Jolson on Tuesday night, which was vaudeville night. And he would play with the house lights up, even with a little runway they put in the orchestra so that he could get down close to the people. One of Trump's executives at Trump Organization, Louise Sunshine, a woman, and while I'm at it, let me mention that close to 45% of the executives in Trump's organization are women, who have always, always, from the very start, gotten the same pay as men. No one ever talks about that, about Trump, that he was an equal opportunity man before there was equal opportunity for women. But Louise Sunshine, who was one of his executives, said something I think is so true of him, and partially why he's an entertainer. He has 360-degree vision. When he's talking to a group, he sees what's going on in front of him, to the side of him, and even behind him. You watch him in front of these large groups of people. He will respond to a person who smiled or laughed. He'll say, oh, you like that one. What were you thinking when I said that? He'll talk to them very directly. So his whole being responds to the audience. He can feel what the audience wants and what the audience needs. In my book, I refer to him as a doctor as well as an entertainer in these large formats, because he offers these people catharsis. When people watch him and listen to him, they feel like he's speaking their mind. This is the entertainer aspect of him. He is so in tune with what people want to hear, and it resonates with what he wants to give, that there is this tremendous connection between the two. He's never oblivious, and that's always been true from his 14 years on The Apprentice, or even before that in his business. I don't want to digress. You had asked about the entertainment. go ahead, Booker.
I have a follow-up. You mentioned that Mr. Post was going to write a book with you, and you mentioned that he hated
Didn't work out.
Mentioned that he hated Donald Trump, and that brings me to the question. Many people do have a hatred to Donald Trump. Where do you see that coming from?
Okay, this is an interesting and very important question. Let me just say that that book never came to fruition due to the 3,000 miles between us. He was in Washington, and I'm here in L.A., and illness. So a number of things prevented it. However, I wrote one or two chapters. I was going to put them in a drawer, and then I thought, I really like this first chapter on citizen Trump. It's about the film Citizen Kane, mm-hmm. his favorite film. And I figured, my kids, after I die, they're going to empty out Dad's desk. They're going to look in the drawer and say, why didn't he ever do anything with this chapter? This is a great chapter. I felt, at least in my mind, it was. So I continued with the book. Now, the interesting thing is, whenever I would discuss Trump with this gentleman, actually, he was a professor, he was chair of a department there in Georgetown. He never took it seriously that I really believed in Trump. He always thought it was with tongue in cheek, right to the very end. It was truly astounding to me. But what it demonstrated was he was a well-educated, sophisticated individual, totally in tune with politics. You live in Washington, that's all you hear about. Yet this guy had a very warped, unreal idea about Trump.
And Dr. Roth, let me cut you off right there because we need to take a break. We're going to come back with this fascinating conversation with Dr. Sheldon Roth.
More Truth in Minutes on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Dr. Sheldon Roth, who wrote the book, Psychologically Sound, The Mind of Donald Trump. Dr. Roth, I hated to cut you off there, but we had to take care of some business. But I had just asked you the question, why was it that Mr. Post didn't care for Donald Trump? And in fact, you said he hated Donald Trump. And so I asked you the question, why is it that so many people hate Donald Trump?
Okay, so what I want to emphasize here is the enormous impact that the mass media, NBC, CBS, you name it, CNN, they all have this very hyper-distorted a shorthand for Trump, a fascist, a liar, a hypocrite, a narcissist, a whole host of psychiatric labels attached to him. So the vast majority of people are constantly hearing Hitler, Mussolini, over and over and over. And of course, Goebbels was right, which is, you know, you tell a lie often enough and people begin to believe it. Yeah. And to contrast that, all you have to do is go back to his experience with the media just prior to his getting into politics. He was the darling of the media. I was talking about the Daily News, which doesn't exist anymore, but did for about 100 years in New York. It was a working man's paper. And the publisher was once interviewed, why is it that you, this working class blue collar paper every single day has something about Donald Trump? And the publisher laughed. He says, you know, if I don't have something about Donald Trump in the Daily News, they don't buy the paper. He said, you walk, you go into the subway and see what people are reading. They're reading the latest thing about Donald Trump. People loved him. No one thought of him as Hitler. No one thought of him as Mussolini. This was because the media loved him. They called him all day long. They had open access to him. He knew everybody. As a matter of fact, he would sometimes jokingly call up, quotes anonymously, and give them tips about Donald Trump. He would plant his own material. So the media has a lot to do with polarization that has occurred. And I go back to Obama. Obama is still involved in the Biden administration.
100%.
When you're talking about Biden's administration, you're talking about all of Obama's acolytes who surround him.
Yes.
So Obama said he was going to change this country fundamentally, and he certainly has done whatever he can to do that. So the media has a lot to do with the way people see him. What they miss completely is Trump's, he's seen these days just as the ramifications from 14 years on The Apprentice, where he was billed as a boss billionaire, and the card world. But people often wonder, how does he appeal to working people like that? How can that happen? What they forget or what they don't know is from his earliest childhood, practically from the time he could walk, Fred Sr. would bring Donald to all his work projects. And like Donald Trump, Fred Sr. was a hands-on man. He looked at every screw, every nail, every board. He knew every worker's name who was working on a building. And Trump learned every single trade: plastering, plumbing, electricity. He worked with his father on weekends. He managed a housing complex in Cincinnati, sold it at a great profit. He knew everyone who lived there. And then he worked with his father in Brooklyn and Queens until he was age 27. He knew every trade. He worked with the workers, and he picked up his father's habits of being absolutely meticulous. It's one of the difficulties he has as president. He's got his nose in everybody's business. He wants to know every single thing and every single detail. At the Trump Organization, he signed every single check and finally became overwhelming. He stopped signing the checks one year, and you know that profits went down 8% because the buck wasn't being watched the way the Donald would watch the buck. So the meticulous nature he had that he learned from his father, he grew into his own business. And while I'm at it, let me tell your people, because they only see this chubby fellow with a nice, graceful golf swing, he was a fantastic athlete, in the military school he attended.
Yeah, he played baseball, I believe.
Yeah, he had offers from the Red Sox. He had offers from the Phillies. He had offers from West Point team. His father said no. And that was the end of that. But he was captain of his high school baseball team. He was first baseman, but he was equally good at football. His father sent him to Fordham, a Catholic university in New York, and he was a star on the football team. And then his father said he couldn't play anymore. He didn't want his brain damaged.
Well, hey, Dr. Roth, I want to stay on Donald Trump for a minute, but then I want to go to Joe Biden. Psychologically,
yes.
And we just have a few minutes left, but let me come to you with this question about Donald Trump, because the weight that he must be feeling right now from all the persecutions and the prosecutions that the Department of Justice are putting on him, and attorney generals and even district attorneys in places like Fulton County, it has to weigh on a person psychologically. How do you think he's holding up through this?
Magnificently. What people don't realize is that when he ran Trump Management, Trump Organization, Trump Management was his father's business. He had about 25,000 employees. He started with no one. He came into Manhattan all alone. That organization was always being sued, always being threatened. Roy Cohn, one of the most infamous, lawyers of the 20th century, was his lawyer. They sued everybody. The real estate business in New York is like a war zone, and you have to have nerves of steel to exist in it. So he has that capacity to be guided by the principles of Norman Vincent Peale. He only sees a problem as this containing the seeds of the solution. So whatever the problem is, he looks into it and what can solve this problem and lead us beyond it. This is how he built his business. This is how he deals in life. So he has organized the entire legal team so that he is geared for survival, provided he wins the election. But that is what he's banking on. I myself feel like he certainly has a good chance.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think he's holding up extremely well. And if you watch him, rewatch it, the interview with Laura Ingraham or with Hannity or any of his speech escapades, if you did not know he had 94 indictments or so about him, you'd never know it was there. You'd never know it was there.
And both of those interviews were, or at least one of them, I believe, was after he was told he had to pay $400 million in a civil lawsuit. I would have been, you would never see me again if they told me that. I promise you that. Yeah, earlier in this hour, I was comparing and contrasting Joe Biden and Donald Trump at the border. They were just there on Thursday. So if you look at Joe Biden psychologically, let's look at that melon head. What do you think he's got going on in there besides a whole lot of nothing?
If he has a whole lot of nothing, he doesn't have too much, too much room for anything else. Biden is a puppet. Biden can't find his way off the stage. How do you think he could possibly organize foreign policy or national issues? He reads from a prompter. He does what he's told. And as long as he follows those orders, everyone calls him Mr. President. He flies on a plane and he's very happy.
Yeah.
He's oblivious. He's oblivious to what's going on outside. For 3 years, he's told us that the border is totally secure. Last week, he suddenly found out, oh my God, we have people coming across the border. How did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, it must be the Republicans' fault. God knows what they would do without Trump, because they can blame him for anything.
Yeah.
So I don't feel that Biden is the kind of president we are usually involved with. We have a man who is who is guided by the same forces that surrounded, the cast is the same as the forces that surrounded Obama. And wherever Biden has his finger into the pie, he's made a mess of things. Afghanistan, as I say it to you, my stomach knots up with what happened to loyal Afghanis and loyal Americans in Afghanistan and the 13 deaths. There was no war for 4 years with Trump. We had endless wars. Putin's talking about nuclear weapons. None of that. You remember, everyone said if Trump was elected, we'd be in a war.
Sure.
Well, we were in no wars. We got out of wars. And with Biden, you have a completely different point of view. They are out to degrade America's power globally and to turn it over to the UN or to some world globalism. What we're seeing now in America, we've seen it before. America swings between a nationalism, Andrew Jackson really was a pivot, or a globalism, which is what we saw with Obama. It swings back and forth between those two things. Washington himself was, George Washington was not a globalist. He was a nationalist. And it's been a constant strain in our nation as to whether to let the world in or keep ourselves separate or find some compromise in between. I don't know if I'm answering your question about Biden.
Yeah, well, you know, Dr. Roth, I look at him, and I'm no medical doctor like you are, but I know what my eyes see. I know what I hear. And obviously the guy is, I mean, he has dementia. You know, that's what's going on with him, in my view, having had family members that have suffered from that. But as a medical doctor, and you look at him, do you ever wonder yourself, why hasn't the 25th Amendment been used? Why are the people around him still having him in charge? And because from a medical standpoint, what's in his head right now? Is there anything left?
Well, one reason he hasn't been changed is because the powers around him don't get along with Kamala Harris. And they're terrified of her, that she's a very loose cannon. That's one thing. The other thing is, he's a puppet. They're getting it done. Obama's still living there in Washington. All of the presidents left the Capitol after their time there. Bush went back, you know, to Texas. The elder Bush went back to Maine. Truman went back to Missouri. Nixon went to New York. No one hangs around Washington. Obama's the only one who hangs around Washington. Biden is a very convenient puppet.
I agree. And Dr. Roth, we have to bring this to a close. I want to thank you so much. You're listening to Dr. Sheldon Roth. Thank you for making the time to come visit with us.
Well, thank you for making the opportunity, Booker. It's been very lovely. Thank you.
I can assure him the pleasure was mine. Dr. Sheldon Roth there. What a pleasure to interview him and have him on the show. My name is Booker Scott, and this is The Truth Be Told. Thank you for joining us. I really mean that. I really appreciate you. And don't forget, you were told 2,000 years ago that you are the salt of the earth. And salt without flavor, it has no value. So whatever you do, keep being salty. Unleash the Political News Hour is next. Have a great night.
There is only one truth. You've been listening to The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott on America Out Loud.